and welcome to a Search CRM podcast on creating customer value with Peppers and Rogers. I'm Lauren Hoyt, site editor. In the November installment of our podcast series, Martha Rogers answers questions from Search CRM readers on building trust with customer strategy and customer equity in the short term and the long term.
Hi, this is Martha Rogers. I'm delighted to be answering some questions for Ask the Expert. I'm going to address some questions first about customer equity, both the long term and the short term. Our first question is this: what are the most important factors to consider when developing a customer equity strategy? Well, there are really three things to consider. The first is the metrics. You want to be sure that you've developed a metric that will not only measure customer lifetime value, but will also measure the rate of change of that value. And we'll take into consideration not just the short-term revenue that a customer provides, but also the long-term equity that a customer is building. So we believe that the return on customer metric, which was the subject of our last book, is a pretty good one for doing that. But the point is that when you start measuring and managing customer value, that you really are looking at some specific metrics. Now, that's the first thing. But the second thing is that you're also developing a business management tool that helps you to think about how to evaluate your own success, the success of the people who work for you, and how to report your success to outsiders. So, for example, if you have people reporting to you, instead of just being responsible for selling a certain number of widgets within a period of time, you could use the customer equity or return on customer measure to make sure that the people working for you are actually building long-term value while they're making current revenue numbers and not just eating out the future making current revenue numbers. So it really does provide you with a way of holding people accountable today for long-term value and also giving them credit for the short-term success that they're enjoying. But the third thing that you want to think about when you're developing a customer equity strategy is really the philosophy behind it. If your goal is to increase the customer's value in order to increase the value of the company, then you really have one major way to do that, and that is to start becoming so valuable to the customer that he or she will become more valuable to you. And that means taking the customer's point of view. That means anticipating what a customer needs. And that means that you have to take the customer's best interest to heart. So in the context of creating a profit for shareholders, you also always do that by making sure that you're being as valuable to customers as you can by taking their point of view, by treating them as fairly as you'd want to be treated if you were a customer. So metrics, business tool, philosophy of doing business, and that's at the heart of a good customer equity strategy. Our second question is very interesting. It is this: I work in retail, and I'm developing a questionnaire to measure customer satisfaction level and how it impacts customer loyalty. What sorts of questions should I ask? That's a very complicated question, to be honest. It'd be nice if there were a simple set of questions that could make that work, but there have been lots and lots of really good, hard researchers who have tried to answer that question simply, and the fact is that we have different answers for different kinds of retailers as well as for different other businesses. But here's the point is, if you want to find out whether customers are satisfied, you're going to have to first ask them. First of all, I don't know what kind of retail you're in, but you're going to have to ask your customers what it is that creates satisfaction or dissatisfaction for them, what makes them happy or discontent. And because until you know that, you can't really decide which questions to ask. You don't know whether it's the service, whether it's the combination of products, whether it's the place that they go, whether it's the way that you accept payment, whether it's, there are lots and lots of factors that might come into play. So you don't even want to be in the business of trying to make the decision ahead of time of what customers are thinking. If I stay in a hotel and they give me a guest comment card and it asks me all about, you know, how I checked in and whether or not the room was clean, but I can't find a way to let them know that, you know, frankly, the big challenge was the way that I made the reservation in the first place, or that when I got ready to leave, the checkout thing was a problem, then they haven't really gotten at the heart of my dissatisfaction, even though the things they asked me to check off would show that things were fine, or the opposite might be true. So when you do this, make sure that you do the work ahead of time. And also, if you do that homework, then you'll be able to figure out that, in fact, the fewer questions you ask, the better, because some questions will be more indicative of the real way that customers feel. Those are the golden questions, and those require the most homework of all. But if you can find a few questions that will yield you a great amount of data, then you're much more likely to get lots of customers to answer those very few questions than to get lots of customers to answer lots of questions. In other words, I can't give you a simple answer. There is no simple answer, but there is the opportunity to look very carefully at customer satisfaction, and better than that, maybe at whether or not customers are willing to recommend to others. That's the Net Promoter Score. And, of course, beyond that, we think it's even more important to look at customer behavior and customer equity. So we hope that you'll be moving your measurements into that area soon. Now I'd like to address a couple of questions about building trust with customer strategy. Here's the first one. In my role as a call center agent, I am occasionally faced with an unsatisfied customer. What is the best way to turn a situation like this around and gain customer trust? Well, if you haven't seen a wonderful book by Ken Blanchard called The 1 Minute Apology, I would highly recommend it to you. It won't take you very long to read, but it will certainly help you in thinking about how to start this process. If a customer has a big problem and they take the trouble to call you and tell you about it, then the first thing we have to do is accept that there's a problem and not try to say, yeah, but you have to understand, well, you know, but our systems won't let us, well, but, and otherwise start sort of mealy-mouthing and making excuses. If we've done something wrong and a person has a problem with that, then we need to say, I'm sorry, we messed up and we need to fix it. Let's see how to get that problem solved. And then we solve the problem. I will tell you that in a lot of cases, prevention can make a huge difference. We had a friend who was the head of a region for an insurance company, and it was in this very southern part of the country and in a place where it didn't freeze very often. And so lots of people who didn't have freeze insurance on those rare occasions when it did freeze would get all sorts of damage, call the insurance company, then find out they didn't have any freeze insurance, and everybody was unhappy. So what this gentleman did was to make sure that everybody was really told about how important it is to have freeze insurance even where it freezes rarely, but also to make sure that every single policyholder was contacted on those rare occasions when there were freeze warnings and told what to do to prevent any freeze damage. So you leave the water dripping, you do a few other things. And then as a result, everybody's happier, even the people who didn't actually have freeze damage policies, and there's less to claim for the people who did. So everyone was happier. Now, what this kind of philosophy about what's good for customers is good for the business can do is lead this gentleman, who was the regional director. Every single dissatisfied customer was sent to him, and he turned every one of them into more business because he listened and he figured out what the problem was and he figured out how to solve it. And he turned those situations into trust. I will tell you that there's a company called Big River Telephone, and it's a voice over IP company, and they now have 30,000 customers. And in the 5 years they've been in business, every one of those customers has been given the CEO's home phone number. Now, that could be a giant problem unless the service is very, very good. But in all that time, in those 5 years, the CEO has only had 3 incidents where people have actually called him at home. So that really is a testament to the great service of the company. But at least as importantly, it also is a reflection on his philosophy, which works like this. All of my customers have my home phone number, and all of my employees know it. And so they solve problems. And finally, our last question today, is there such a thing as a perfect customer experience? How would you describe it? Well, I can give you some examples from customers and from participants in our recent audiences and presentations and workshops that we've done. We had a gentleman who told us about a situation where he had bought a house and he got a 1-year warranty on the house, and the contractor actually called him a month before the the house was going to go off of warranty and said, let's do a walkthrough and make sure everything is working well for you. And he knows if he ever put on an addition or did anything for himself that he'd want that contractor. And he also, of course, has told that story to many people who might also use the contractor. Here's another example. A friend of ours had a son who had an Xbox 360. Many people who had that hardware had a problem with it after a certain amount of time. And so Microsoft extended the warranty time for all those people so that they could be covered when they had the repair take place. A friend of ours had has a son who actually was one of the early buyers of Xbox 360. His machine had a problem after it was out of warranty before the new policy was put into place. So he sent in the Xbox for repair, got it back, had paid for the repair, and then as soon as the new announcement was made about the extended warranties, he actually got a rebate check in the mail. So that was a great experience. And then, there are plenty of other excellent examples, a really wonderful one from a terrific hospital that really takes the patient's point of view and the caregivers and family's point of view. A friend of ours, our mother, was diagnosed with cancer, 3 spots on the brain, 1 on the liver. She died a month later. It was just a terrible tragedy. And yet everybody at the hospital was very helpful and wonderful, but it didn't stop there. About a month after the death, the hospital contacted our friend and said, we want to have a memorial service for your mother and several other people who had passed away in the hospital during that same period. And so they had the memorial service, which my friend described as lovely. A year went by, and on the anniversary of the death, the hospital sent a beautiful letter signed by several people with a card that said, we just wanted you to know we're thinking of you, and we know that this is a sad time because it's been a year since that happened. Now, that was a terrible experience, which the hospital turned into, well, sort of a good experience. And that's the kind of thing that companies can do when they really care about customers. The point is this, that a customer experience is not just, oh, one piece of theater or a momentary sort of delight. Those are great. That's wonderful. It's a step in the right direction. But real experience that's positive for customers comes from companies who care, companies with a memory, so customers don't have to tell their story over and over, and really provide ongoing value to a customer and understand that customers are truly the most valuable entity of any business. They're our only source of revenue. And then treat those customers as exactly that, not only the only source of revenue, but a scarce resource, a finite number of customers, and treats every one of them as rare and valuable. And when that happens, then we're much more likely to see really terrific customer experiences. Thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you again in a month.
Thanks to Martha Rogers for joining us this month, and thank you to our listeners. Be sure to join us again in December for the next installment of the Creating Customer Value podcast series with Peppers and Rogers. For Search CRM, I'm Lauren Hoyt.